This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
One in the books, two to go. Waiting for Calvin Sampson to join the big show as we get the second hour started here on The Usual Suspects. Due to join us at any time.
I had a bone to pick with you.
Okay, shocker.
I followed you back after my little hissy fit.
Yeah?
You never followed me back. What are you, Charlie Polillo now?
Huh? I didn't look at it. Huh? I didn't realize. I mean, you know what? Maybe I should let you squirm a little bit.
I mean, I'll unfollow you. We can do that, too. Well,
then I'll start.
We can go back to the
block. What was your quote when you did it to me? That you weren't kidding?
Zero tolerance.
Zero tolerance.
2019.
Yeah. Well, here's your zero dark 30, bitch. Yeah.
Also, just to clean up house, the Rockets 1-2 versus the Portland Trailblazers this year. So they do not have the tie break. So if the Rockets and the Blazers do in fact tie, Rockets would be the 4 seed. Blazers would be the 3 seed. Not good if you're a Rocket fan, because that would mean you would have to face Golden State in round number 2.
Right.
Should you win your matchup against probably the Spurs. I mean, it could be anybody at this point, but right now it would be the Spurs. But good for me, because it would further that prediction.
Your theory.
My theory that, especially if the Thunder remain at the 8 seed and the Rockets tie the Blazers and lose their spot, end up in the 4 seed, that would further my prediction of the Warriors being susceptible to getting bounced prior to the Western Conference Finals. So. I'm not going to say I'm rooting for it, Joel. I'm not going to say I have my fingers crossed that the Rockets end up in the 4 seed and have the tough road to the Western Conference Finals.
You would sacrifice the chance of your team winning a championship just to be right?
Not going to say that. I'm not saying, yeah.
Okay.
I'm totally saying that. I would definitely like to be right now. I don't care. And because you know what that would mean, right? You know what it would mean. It would mean that the Rockets would advance to the Western Conference Finals. They would just have the tough road to do so.
The tough road to hoe?
Yeah, because once the Thunder bounce the Warriors, that would make it easier for everybody. Or once, if the Rockets do so in round 2, boom, they're onto the Western Conference Finals. So, yeah, you know what? I will hope they get the 4 seed.
All right.
How about that? All right, then. There's
all right,
that.
We'll see. Because here's the thing. I mean, look. The way they're playing right now, I like their chances against most, but you do want to have the easiest road possible.
Of
you'd love to see, you know, a team like, even with Portland, it doesn't scare me because they're wounded.
Yes.
You know,
totally
look for a team that's not at full strength or doesn't have something that you have that you can exploit. And I think for most of the bottom teams in the league, obviously you don't want to see the Thunder in the first round.
No.
But if you can avoid the Thunder and get one of those other teams, advantage Rockets.
Yep.
But you want the easiest road possible. Last year, it couldn't have gone much smoother for you. You know, you annihilate the Timberwolves and the Jazz, and you're well-rested, and it showed exactly what they could do. They came in without a major injury, and they gave the Warriors all they could handle. And unfortunately, the only thing that set them back was the hamstring at the end.
Which somebody had a great point. Wouldn't you rather face the Warriors in the second round? There's a better chance of CP3 being healthy. That's actually, I mean, I know that's tongue-in-cheek and kind of funny, but it's really kind of true, too. The sooner you can get to the Warriors in the playoffs, the healthier Chris Paul's likely to be. That's a pretty valid point, actually. I know that
it
was
is,
intended to be kind of funny.
But here's the thing.
And by the way, I got to clean something up. I misspoke. If the Rockets end up in the 4 seed right now, they would face the Jazz, not the Spurs.
And I like that matchup.
Yeah.
I think that's a good matchup for them. But when I look at everything that you're saying, this is kind of like the Nene theory.
Okay.
I'm tired, or the Dwight Howard theory before him. I'm tired of babying and nursing a guy that doesn't play back-to-backs and for the sake of the keeping him healthy for the playoffs, only to see him still get hurt in the playoffs. At some point, you just got to take the training wheels off and go, you got to go. And because this is the kind of rigorous schedule it's going to be in the playoffs. And if you can't handle it now, then you can't handle it then. And then we just got to make, it's better to know heading in that this is something that could happen or is going to happen, as opposed to, Chris, look, we want you to keep your minutes down. Then there's, you lack some of that chemistry and on court communication that goes so well. Chris Paul's got to be on the floor. I'm tired of babysitting Chris Paul's hamstrings. He's just got to go.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not so much on Nene. I'm actually fine with the way they do Nene, because if you think about it, Clint Capella's playing about 34 minutes a game. All right, so that leaves, what, 14 minutes left that needs to be filled by a big man, and you got Kenneth Faried that can do that. You've also got Nene, who's averaging when he plays. He's averaging 13 minutes a game. So there's your 14 minutes. So as a backup to do his job and play his role, and there's no back-to-backs in the playoffs. So I kind of like the fact that if Nene is healthy going in, just kind of as a bruiser and a big man and somebody to rebound and play a little bit of defense, I'm good with that. Plus you have, like I said, you had Kenneth Faried as a backup if you needed that as well. I'm okay with that, but I do agree with you about Chris Paul. Bro, you just gotta earn your money. Like, first of all, as much money as that dude's getting paid, you gotta be there. You gotta be out there. And you know, it sucks to go in thinking that, like, you're going into the playoffs a little bit timid because you're like, well, Chris Paul, we're all relying on him being healthy. And it shouldn't be like that. But you also have to know that when you signed him, or when you went out and got him, and you went out and got his hamstring, and you went out and got his health, and he's never been the poster child for a healthy NBA player. So you kind of accepted that when you did it.
But here's the thing. The problem that we have is most of his times when he's susceptible to injury in his career, it's the postseason. That's what's the most frustrating and painful and hurtful.
Sit his ass down
because
the rest
of the year, then. It's like the Rockets deciding between a Harden MVP or a championship. Harden's best basketball, unfortunately, so far to this point, we don't know what's going forward, has been in the regular season. And then in the playoffs, there's a huge drop-off. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul, same thing. Chris Paul is health-related, but Chris Paul is a Hall of Famer because of his regular season, but the man has never been to a Western Conference Finals. I don't know if that's in the past where they've kind of done what we're talking about here, maybe eased up a little bit. They knew where their position was going to be going into the Western Conference playoffs, whether it be with New Orleans or then with the Clippers. And then when he had to put the pedal down and really go, it acted up. But they need to look at, as much as they look at analytics, they need to look at how he's been handled in terms of his workload and all of that in every time he's been in the playoffs and try and do it differently. Because you say Nene, but Nene got hurt the last 2 years just like clockwork, and all they did was nurse him all year.
No, now that I do, I totally agree, but you can't predict that. I mean, you, sure. What are you supposed to do? What would you rather have seen, Joshi up here? I mean,
he gone.
Yeah.
They just flat out got rid of him.
That's what I'm saying. What alternative do they have at this point? They need to look for a backup big man for Capella going forward. Yep. And they'll probably will do that in the free agent market and sign a younger version of Nene to come in and do that. But right now you're stuck with him. And it was decent money because you didn't overpay for Nene.
No, but it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because if you rest him, it hasn't worked out. So yeah. if you give him a full workload, now people are going to think, and if he gets hurt, then they're going to say, well, you did that to yourself by giving him too much. There's got to be a happy medium in there, but what has been done in the past hasn't been working because they still have gotten hurt.
What's a good field goal percentage in the NBA?
I mean, it depends on the player, right?
Well, if you're in general, what's a good field goal percentage? If you were to see, we know that 30% from 3-point range is
so the whole thing. If you're a Hall of Famer like Ray Allen, Steve Nash, it was always going to be 90-40. It was 90 from the free throw line, 40 from 3-point range.
40 from 3-point range?
I think it was 90-50-40. 50% from the field, 40 from 3-point range.
Damn.
And 90% from the line is going to give you like Hall of Fame. I'm saying Hall of
Fame.
That's
really good numbers, though.
Yeah, that's Steve Nash, okay. Ray Allen.
What about Steph Curry? 42% in the playoffs? Is that good
from the field?
Yeah,
it's not bad.
It should be. If you're a big man, it's not good because you should be in the paint a lot.
If you're a guard, 42%
yeah,
really
from
good.
The
that's
field.
Very good.
Yeah,
32% from 3-point range.
Yeah, that's good.
22 points a game.
That's not bad. Good.
That's Harden's numbers in the playoffs.
I
realize the results are bad. But I'm like, because I was like, man, we're always saying that because we see it. We watch it. We've seen him play those games. We saw the Mike D'Antoni spin in the clipboard with Harden next to him. Both of them lost in the playoffs a couple years ago, not knowing what to do. But I look at his averages and 28.6 last year, 28.5 the year before, 26, 27, 26, 26, all with the Rockets. He's never averaged less than 26.3 points a game in the playoffs. Shooting percentages is a different story. Early on as a Rocket, from the field, he shot 39 and 37%. That's awful. I get that, because some people are shooting that from three-point range, and he's shooting that from the field. But ever since those, I mean, the last 4 years, he shot 43, 41, 41, and 41.
Okay. I'm going to preface everything about to come out of my mouth. I'm going to preface it by saying I'm not going to label you that,
because I started this.
Yeah, but I am not hating on James Harden, but I will give you the rebuttal to what you just said. Okay.
Which is why I brought it up.
Like last year, he has soaked up a majority of those numbers against bad teams in the first two rounds.
Okay.
The reason why people are so critical of him in the playoffs is not for his overall performances like the numbers you gave me. Mm-hmm. It's for critical times in games. The block that Ginobili got on a last shot.
That was ugly.
The fact that in a deciding game seven on your floor, you chose not to shoot the ball for the first 21 minutes.
Yeah. LeBron has done that in the past, too,
sure,
by the way.
Didn't step up in a game seven against the Warriors. The whole team didn't. But I'm just saying, this is why, because he's your best player, he's going to take the load and the brunt of the criticism. And the criticism on Harden is going to be, in the bigger games, later in the series, or in the critical moments, that's when he hasn't been his best.
Okay.
But numbers-wise, he has numbers that he should have as the best player on a really good team. But yeah, he has soaked up. You look at the Timberwolves series, and you look at the Utah series. Mm-hmm. In the first four games of both series, he blew the doors off of them.
He averaged 12. He put up 12 points in game two against the Timberwolves. He did 44, 12, 29, and 36.
So I said the first four games. So right. Three out of the four, he's 30-some plus. Yeah.
And you're right. The Utah series, he went for 41, 32, and then it was pretty pedestrian the rest of the series. 25, 24, 18. Yep. Golden State, I mean, listen to his points per game. And then I'll give you the results of the game. 41 in a loss, 27 in a win, 20 in a loss, 30 in a win, 19 in a win, which really surprises me. The fact that he got 19 in a win. And then the last two games that they lost, obviously, to the Warriors, 32 and 32.
Okay.
So we'll continue.
Yeah, we'll continue. Coach is on the hold. So you want to go to a break, Nick? We'll get a break in, come back with Coach, or just get him now?
Yeah.
All right, great. Okay, we'll go right to it. We appreciate, as I previewed, Coach Kelvin Sampson of the Houston Cougars joining us right now. Coach, always appreciate you taking some time, but especially during this critical time for you guys. Congratulations, first and foremost, on a historic run for this program. Most wins ever for a Cougar basketball team. The fact that you got them back to the Sweet 16 for the first time in 34 years. I know you're a guy in the moment, and you don't want to get into too much, but I just want to say props to you. You and I text a lot, and I tell you all the time, phenomenal job, and just way to go.
Joel, I appreciate it. It's a really proud of this group of kids. You know, the greatest thing that I've seen the NCAA do is allow us to scholarship kids and let them go to summer school. So every kid we have enrolls in summer school in June for first session, 3 credits, and second summer session, 3 credits. And we're allowed to coach them for 4 hours a week while they're in school. So we took advantage of that time, knowing that we were losing Rob Gray, Devin Davis, Wes Van Beck, and Nur Azana. We had to establish an identity, get our leadership structure set up, and then we worked on the things we had to do to win games this year, starting in June. But these kids have really put in a lot of time, effort, hard work. They've learned to play for each other. As the season progressed, we were winning games while we were learning. Not necessarily a good team yet, but found a way to win games. And when the smoke cleared, you look up. This team wins the American Athletic Conference Championship. You know, they get to the Sweet 16. All those are great things to look back on one day. But like you said, Joel, we're living in the moment. Got a great opportunity Friday night.
Coach, this is Barry. One of the things that I'm so fascinated by and so amazed at is the buy-in that you've gotten from everyone on this team, from the one through the end of the bench. Like, everybody's bought in, and we talked about it the other day on the show. Every single second, they're out there hustling. They're doing exactly what you ask of them, and that says a lot about you as a coach. How are you getting these guys and everybody, role players on the bench, in as well, to all buy into what you're trying to get them to do?
Well, I think that goes back 30 years. The team that was 13 and 19 that we inherited, and just trying to get some warm bodies together so we could fill the team that first year. The reason that team won 13 games is that they bought in. 2 feet in. The next year we went from 13 to 22, same thing. A lot of teams, a lot of people may be paying attention to our team right now. This team is really no different than last year's team in terms of that. Last year's team was really no different in terms of the year before. What we've done is just upgrade our recruiting, as you should do as your program develops. But that part of it has remained the same. This team doesn't play any harder, hasn't bought in any more than last year's team. The biggest difference, I think, is our depth, bringing Dejon Giroux, Nate Hinton, Bryson Gresham, Chris Harris, Sed Alley off the bench. You know, you're bringing guys like that off the bench, your team's pretty good. But our culture was set up that first year while we were losing games. We were establishing our culture. That's why when the season's over, I considered it a win. I had no delusions of grandeur. I knew we weren't very good, so winning a lot of games, I didn't care about that. I just wanted to make sure that those kids understood what the standards that we were going to set every day. We had to teach them how to practice, how to surrender to our culture and how hard we practice. So I've been proud of every team we've had as far as that's concerned.
Talking about that, Coach, here's one that I've been thinking about asking you because it was such a great job, but when you looked at taking this program over, and you've taken over some programs, you built some programs, but I want to know the difference between building a program and having to rebuild a program. Because what you did down there on Cullen Boulevard was rebuilding a program in which the fan base was football-based. They had turned themselves off to basketball. The facilities were less than stellar. You were sitting in a hotbed of basketball talent in Houston, but they weren't picking that university and those teams. They were picking other state schools. And the rebuild, to me, seems to magnify how difficult a task it can be as opposed to building a program from scratch.
But this one wasn't a rebuild, Joel. It was starting over. We had to get the bulldozers out and dig the dirt up and lay a foundation and then go from there. But I took this job April 3rd, 2014. 3 weeks later, we only had five guys on the team because everybody had transferred. And I talked to Mac Rose, our athletic director. He thought we had a chance to keep some of those kids. And I wanted to know why. They want to leave. Let them leave. Don't make them stay here. Now, we're not going to an NCAA tournament next year. For instance, the Tayshaun Thomas kid. Now, he transferred to Oklahoma and went to the tournament. Great decision by him. Travis Reed, the kid from Kentucky, transferred from Stanford. That program hasn't been to the tournament since he was there, so he wanted to go to Kentucky. Now, we have to start over. I mean, literally start over, and that's a build. Washington State was a rebuild. Oklahoma, a little bit of a rebuild. Billy Tubbs had great, great years there, but this is nothing like those schools. This was apathy from the top down, facilities. Everything was turned off. But that's why I took it. I wanted that. I wanted to immerse myself in getting this thing up and running. The chance to work with my family, my son, my daughter. I knew how good they were, and this what we're doing gives you an idea of how good our staff has been. It's, you don't do this with one person.
No
this
question.
This is a shared experience. Every year we got a little bit better, and you know this year we're number one in our conference, and we're one of 16 teams still playing. But proud of our program. Excited that our fans are excited. Those fans chanting Sweet 16 in Tulsa the other night was skin tingling. I got goosebumps listening to them. So that was amazing. And I'm so happy for this team, especially guys like Galen and Armani, who bought into a vision when there was maybe nothing to see.
Yep.
Head coach, U of H men's basketball head coach, Kelvin Sampson, joining us on The Usual Suspects. Coach, I wanted to ask you this because I'm watching the game and things got a little chippy there before the half. And then at one point in the second half, there was a loose ball went out of bounds right in front of the bench. And I think you ended up with the ball in your hands. And there were some words exchanged with one of the Ohio State players and you guys bumped knuckles. And there was a few jokes made afterwards. What happened there? Because I don't think that anybody really talked about it. I was just curious what ended up happening there at that point in the game.
Somebody said something, somebody reacted to it, and then quickly thereafter there was an apology, and we all laughed about it. But, you know, at the heat of the moment, it's like the thing at the end of the first half. You know, we're a physical team. We're scrappy. We fight. Some teams react to that. Some teams don't. But I actually had forgotten about it, so it must not have been a big deal.
Coach, I wrote an article about this, and again, kind of to what Barry was saying, I was so complimentary of the fact that you've got a team. You don't have that one guy you just give the ball to on the wing like James Harden and get out of the way. You've got several guys, and you look at your box scores throughout the year, there are different leading scorers. There's different leading rebounders. Galen's just an incredible leader in the way he pushes the action. When you look at the way this team has performed, and then you look at your conference, and you look at what Taco Fall, Johnny Dawkins, and that group has done, you look at what Cincinnati did to be a 7, I believe, seed. But the fact that you beat LSU, you beat good teams, but you weren't getting the respect. Now you're getting the respect. It's almost like, where have you been all year when this team was not just blowing the doors off of just anybody that came their way, but really good basketball teams that have showed how good they have been in based on this tournament?
Well, I think that's normal everywhere, Joel. I never get upset about that stuff. I mean, familiarity breeds contempt. The more you see somebody, the more you see what's wrong with them. Whereas a team you never see, you think is great because of something they did 1,000 miles away and you saw their highlights. People didn't realize how good UCF was until, not, you know, they beat us. You know, what was wrong with us? When they almost beat Duke was, wow, UCF's really good.
Yep.
So that's not unusual. You know, people don't know what they don't know, and that's why they're fans. You know, we're down here in the salt mine swinging that rock, swinging that hammer, hitting that rock every day. We know how good every team was. I knew that when the season was over, I thought the best team we played all year was LSU.
Yeah.
But I knew how good they were when we played them in December. I knew how good Oregon was too. You know, they had their full complement of players when we played them. They had the 7-1 kid Bo Bo and all those other kids. That was a good team we beat.
No doubt.
Which shows you what a great job Dana Altman's done. But you look at the team still playing. You know, LSU, we played and beat. Oregon, we played and beat. I'm not sure if there's somebody else. But I think if you look at our rebounding stats, it tells you all you need to know about our team. And we're the number one rebounding team in our conference. Our leading rebounder is Armani Brooks at 6.5 rebounds a game. You know, we rebound as a team. We score as a team. Everything is about our depth. Corey Davis has been our best player, and we play through him a lot, especially to close games. But Dejon Giroux is very capable. Fabian White has really progressed. Nate Hinton's had his moments, certainly Armani. And really can't game plan to stop a guy on our team. Because we've got 10 guys all contribute to us winning almost every night.
I look at this matchup with Kentucky, Coach, and I've said this on the air all week. I firmly believe this. Cal has done a heck of a job, and we know that he's able to get those kids that are one and done. But the one thing that those kids don't have that you can't teach is the fact they don't have experience in the tournament. They don't have experience on that big-time stage. And they've got to perform now as the lights get brighter and the stage gets bigger. And your guys have been through a lot. And the one thing that I really like is it's on both ends of the floor. They're going to make you uncomfortable, and they are going to be relentless. And they have so many different ways to beat you that I think that's a huge advantage against a team that comes in lacking experience like the Wildcats. I'm looking forward to the matchup. I don't expect you to give away any game plans, but you have to feel a confidence level knowing that your team has been through some wars. You've experienced heartbreak in the tournament, but now it's not like this is your first go-round in a Sweet 16. Sure, it is, but I think this team is set up right to be playing the best basketball at the right time.
Yeah. But I also know that if I had experienced the choice between experience and great talent, I would always take great talent. It's still a basketball game.
Yeah.
I never lose sight of the fact that Tyler Hero is a projected first-round draft choice, P.J. Washington, lottery pick, Ashton Hagens, first-round pick, Travis Reed. They've got five guys that are projected either lottery or first round. And sometimes when you have that, that trumps that experience thing. So they beat Wofford without their best player.
Yep.
As you watch that film and you rewind it, play it, rewind it, John Calipari has done a great job with this team. He really has. They defend. They defend. They rebound. They're big, strong, physical. They remind me a little bit. Their guards are a little bit like Michigan in that they're 6'5 and 6'6.
Good luck. Bring That's it home for us, Coach. We're pulling for you.
Okay, Barry and Joe, I really appreciate you guys having me on.
There you go. Kelvin Sampson, coach of your Cougars, getting ready for the Sweet 16 and the Kentucky Wildcats. Always good to have him be a part of the show. We're going to take a quick break. Come back with a whole lot more. It's The Usual Suspects. It's ESPN 97.5.
Answer that.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. ACA could be tweaked, reformed, or repealed in the future. But for now, employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.